I'm gonna knit, knit, knit all day. I'm gonna knit my blues away. Well,
are you a knitter? Let us know why you love to knit. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 3rd. A decade and a half ago, our guest traded a Silicon Valley career for a farmhouse in Maine and devoted herself to becoming the eyes and fingers of knitters everywhere. A self-proclaimed yarn evangelist, writer, and knitter, Clara Parks, is with us to share the art of yarn whispering, and we'll share stories of the places that she explored in search of the best yarns and craftspeople. And we'll welcome your questions and your experiences as a knitter. Or maybe you're a wannabe knitter and you have a question about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we would love it if you would tweet us something you've made or something you're making right now so we can talk about it. Let me welcome our guest. Clara Parks is a writer and a knitter. She is author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. Her previous books include The Yarn Whisperer and The Knitter's Book of Yarn. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, let's start at the beginning. More than 10 years ago, you left your high-tech career in Silicon Valley to build what you called a quieter, creative life on the coast of Maine. What led to this change, and what does your new, quieter life look like?
It actually ended up being louder than it was in California.
Yeah.
But it was at the rise of kind of the first tech, right before the first tech bubble in San Francisco. And I was seeing this split between kind of personal, expressive, creative sides of ourselves and technology moving us forward faster, kind of in a more anonymous way. And I realized that wasn't how I wanted to do things. And my family has had land in Maine forever, and I just happened to go there on a vacation. And I was sitting on a rock looking out over the ocean, and I realized this is where I need to be. There was a yarn store there. I immediately got some yarn and started knitting, and just, you know, when something pulls you in a direction and you know you have to follow it?
Yeah, I do, and that sounds beautiful. Is that the first time you picked up knitting needles?
Actually, no. I was 13 years old, Christmas time, actually in Kennebunkport, Maine, where my grandparents lived, and making a very difficult adjustment to a new high school, and I suddenly spotted my grandma's yarn basket. And something in me, I'd seen it all my life, but suddenly I needed to know how you made it work, you know? Like, mm-hmm. You know, so for some people, it's a car or a machine, but for me, it was this inanimate object that I knew there was a series of motions that you could make that would turn that ball of yarn into this piece of fabric, and I had to know how you did that. So my grandma taught me then.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of magic. So you have called yourself a yarn evangelist. What do you mean by that?
Well, when I started this path, it was 2000, and we were just starting to see online yarn stores. And I was, like every other knitter out there, I was going berserk, just like, oh my God, this whole new marketplace of yarns that you could discover. And it was really difficult to find any information about them. You know, like what did these fibers, you could read the description, and it was always very flowery because it was marketing, right? So It was beautiful, lovely, soft, and sensual. And then I would get the yarn, and it didn't match what I thought it was. And there was no place to go to find out what, you know, how could you read the ingredients and take a look at the yarn and get a sense of how it really was going to behave. So I decided I would do that. I would become, like, I would swatch. I would be the hands for knitters, and I would tell them everything that I could learn about what went into this yarn. And so gradually we've moved from a place of yarn as a means to an end. You know, I love this sweater. I'll just get some of that stuff and make the sweater. To, oh, here's a beautiful skein from a small farm in Montana, and it was spun, you know, at Blackberry Ridge Woolen Mill right there in Wisconsin, and what can I make from it?
Oh. So are you still on a mission then to be the eyes and fingers of knitters everywhere?
I Although I'm very happy to report that knitters are more and more yarn curious than ever before. So it's fun. They're upping the game, really.
Yeah. So what is it that makes knitting such a labor of love for you?
You know, I think it's something about the hand-eye coordination and a series of very, very simple repetitive motions and this tactile experience of feeling these fibers flow through your hands and watching a sheet of beautiful fabric emerge. And it's something that's entirely mine. I feel like in a world where we're becoming more and more automated and we don't even have handwriting anymore. Everybody texts and we have, you know, emojis. this is an opportunity to create something that's utterly distinct and mine. It's an expression of myself, and it's functional. It keeps us from freezing to death. It keeps us from being naked.
That's right. You know, interesting too. I'm not a knitter. I'm a wannabe knitter. Not until recently. I didn't think I had the time, or I my mom never knitted, and my grandmother. I didn't even know my grandmother, so I guess I never really witnessed it as I was growing up. But I have a friend who is a yoga instructor, and she's a knitter, and she recently held a workshop, yoga and knitting, because she finds it very meditative. And I thought, well, you know what? I do yoga. Why not knit and do yoga?
Mm-hmm. You can get twice the satisfaction out of one moment in time.
Yeah. And in fact, Christy Taylor, who's my producer director this morning, she says she did learn how to knit from her mom back when she was about 12 or 13 as well. And she would do it in college during a college class instead of doodling or spacing out somewhere else. It helped her focus on actually, even though she was knitting and, you know, doing that task, it actually helped her as she was listening to the professor.
Oh, totally. I really do believe it distracts that chewing gum side of your brain.
The chewing gum side.
And I know it looks like we're not paying attention, but we're actually keeping that, you know, the pen clicker, like, we're keeping that at bay, and you really do hear better and focus better.
Yeah. So what inspired the journeys that you describe in your new book, Knitlandia?
They really came from the last 15 years. I launched Knitters Review in 2000, and at first it was about yarn specifically, and then I realized that there were events that you could go to that celebrated yarn, that celebrated the knitting tradition, that were sheep and wool festivals. They were actual knitting conferences. They were trade shows, and over time, my travels built, and I got more invitations to go places. And whenever I would go places, I would report from them. And I realized, really, over the last 15 years in particular, the knitting world has seen a massive transformation in scale and sophistication and activity. And we don't have any kind of collective history about what's going on, about our landmarks, and our legends, our important people and places. And so I really went back to look at the most important places, the most historical or significant for this period of time, and I wanted to tell the story, and I wanted to tell the story of what it's like to travel to Iceland, the you know, wool capital of the world, practically, or, you know, what happens when a knitter goes to Paris and promises their family they won't go to a yarn store. And this is something all knitters, they can understand. You promise and you promise and something snaps.
So you went to a yarn store in Paris, I take it.
Well, yes. But there's a reason behind it. But and that's the thing, and I think it's probably true with any really, like, passionate segment of the population. If you're passionate about something in particular, it lends a beautiful focus or a window through which you can see the world when you travel.
Yeah. We have just a minute before a news break. What is significant in the knitting world about Minnesota?
Oh, my God. Minnesota has just a superb, fantastic knitting community. I mean, you are the home of Meg Swanson and Elizabeth Zimmerman and Schoolhouse Press and you have mills, and you have fantastic yarn stores, and you have guilds, and you have cold weather, which lends itself to wool beautifully.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about knitting and the Midwest, and we will welcome your questions, your experiences, your answer to the question, why are you a knitter? What do you love about knitting? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We would also love to see some of your work. If you'd like to post a photo on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet it at Joy Cardine Show, we are talking with Clara Parks, who is the author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. Her previous books include The Yarn Whisperer and The Knitter's Book of Yarn. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
I'm going to knit myself a sweater.
We're talking about knitting sweaters and other things, and what we learn from knitting and how the benefits of knitting. We're welcoming your thoughts, your questions for our guest, Clara Parks, who is a writer and knitter. She is author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World, and we're talking about her travels to all places knitting in this book, and we're also welcoming your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And again, we do welcome your posts, your photos of things that you are knitting or have knitted. Or you know what? Maybe you received a gift from someone that someone knitted for you. You can thank them with a photo of it. Let's take a call from Maria in Eau Claire. Hi, Maria.
Hi there, Joy. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you, Maria, and thank you for calling. So what is your knitting story?
Oh, my knitting story is I'm originally from Germany, and I am 52 years old, and I grew up with my sister. She's 2 years older, and she already knew how to knit. I believe she was 9, I was 7, so I always wanted to knit, and I didn't have the dexterity yet, so it frustrated me, but I really kept on going. So I learned it from our mother and from my sister, so ever since then, I just love knitting.
And what are you still knitting to this day? Are you knitting something now?
Yes, actually, I'm trying to knit my hat for this weather is kind of called for, nice warm head.
Yeah.
But I have limited time, and I have noticed that I really yearn for knitting again. It is just so relaxing, and it always, I don't know, when I was younger and went to college, I just helped me focus as well, as your guest said. It just is a relaxing thing, and I just love yarn, too. I could just buy just yarn. Every time I see yarn, I just want to go and buy it.
I bet you relate, Clara.
Oh, very, very much, yes.
I love that. In fact, my sister did take up knitting in recent years, and she would buy yarn and yarn, and she had a wall of yarn in her living room with, you know, different storage containers. It was really something. It's not, and it's a good obsession, though, I think, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I also like to think of it as insulation.
Oh, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maria also said that knitting was very widespread and very popular in Germany. I suppose, you know, Wisconsin is a home to many German immigrants, and I suppose the weather and other things is similar there.
That's exactly true. I mean, hopefully it's coming back now, but still in Germany and a lot of cold weather European countries, there's still the tradition of teaching children how to knit at a very early age.
Yeah. Well, tell us about you mentioned you went to Iceland, and Iceland is significant to the knitting world because?
Iceland is significant to the knitting world because the sheep that are on the island are pretty much they're time capsules to the original Viking settlers, 1,100 years ago. They never meddled with the sheep genetics, And so you have this very intriguing breed that produces multiple colors and a very distinct texture of wool. And everybody there wears wool sweaters. They wear the lopapesa with the traditional patterning around the yoke. So, I mean, practically, that not even, I didn't see a dog sweater, but that doesn't mean that they don't knit them for their dogs. It really is a national point of pride, and it's a distinct part of their tradition and their cultural heritage. And when you go there, you're just in like a living wool museum. It's a beautiful place to go, and also it has a wool-friendly climate.
Yeah, I bet. And I see, I know you went to Paris, you went to Scotland.
Yes. There's a and I guess it's a cold weather climate's kind of invited, but there's a real rebirth of kind of a knitting passion, especially in the UK and especially in Scotland. And there's a new festival, the Edinburgh Yarn Festival, which is just coming up now, that is a celebration of local producers and hand dyers and designers, and there are workshops and there's room to just hang out and meet other knitters, and they have tea and they have cakes. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and when we had the news break, you were just beginning to tell us about your trip to Minnesota. Tell us the significance and what you saw or learned in Minnesota.
Oh, there's an event. There are actually two sides of it. So there's Minnesota has fantastic knitting guilds. I mean, all in Wisconsin, you also do too. Cold climates, mm-hmm. In particular. But it's this huge shindig that just goes for one day, and it's in a local high school. And it's like somebody waved their magic fairy wand over this school, and it became like a knitting paradise. All the classrooms, instead of teaching math and science and English, they teach knitting techniques. And the hallways, they've been swept clear of all their signs of high school, and it's a huge marketplace.
Oh, my gosh.
And what wasn't in the story, but it's a parallel to that, is there's Stephen B. He has a yarn store there, and he also now has kind of extended it so that you can keep the party going even further. It's tremendously fun.
Yeah, you wrote, nobody does knitting or knitting guilds quite like the folks in the Midwest. So that's just because we know a good time, right?
Absolutely. You really do.
Yeah. We are talking about knitting, and we're wondering if you would like to share a story about knitting, what knitting means to you. Do you knit, or are you a wannabe knitter? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Clara Parks, who is the author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. Her previous books include The Yarn Whisperer and The Knitter's Book of Yarn. And our next caller is Paula in Racine. Hello, Paula.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. What a fun show. I learned to knit as a kid from my grandmother and mother, and so that caught the bug. I made 4-H projects. But I remember as a kid, every winter, she would make all the grandkids a new pair of mittens, and she would never have to measure your hand. She would look at your hand, and the mittens were perfect every single time. So I haven't perfected it like she has, but I love making socks and mittens, and so I do that kind of all year round. And I love the natural fibers and the wood needles. And when I go into a yarn store, it's like going into a candy store. I have to shop myself because it's just a really relaxing hobby, and I just have that connection when I'm knitting. I think of all the memories that I have from my family. So this is my story.
Thank you for sharing it. And I can imagine. I have my mother-in-law would knit mittens and socks, and she passed away many years ago, and I still have the socks she made me, and I still wear them, Clara.
Oh, that is so sweet.
So that memory is that I think that whole memory part of it is an important part of the popularity of knitting.
Oh, I definitely think so. For those of us who are lucky enough to learn from loved ones, sometimes if I'm knitting by a window, like on an airplane, and I'll catch the reflection of my hands, and it's just it's mirrored enough that it's slightly foreign, and I feel like I'm watching my grandma.
Oh.
It's just a kind of a visceral memory, and you know, you think that we've been doing this for 1,000 years. There's so much that has to be kind of imprinted on us on a cellular level.
How long have we been doing this?
The first knitting-like fabrics were probably the 3rd to 5th century in Egypt. But the first, it's actually one of the newest kind of textile traditions compared to weaving. So the first the first knitting pattern that we really know of was probably in the 1500s. So that's still a long time.
It sure is. Now, our caller mentioned that she prefers wood needles and natural fibers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. I guess, I understand, but I guess I have to admit, I've seen metal knitting needles more than I see wood ones, but that's just me.
Needles, it's a very interesting thing. It's sort of like chefs and knives, that different materials create a different degree of surface friction against which the fibers rub. And so wooden needles, they tend to be warm in the hand. They're slightly yielding depending on the type of wood. And they have a greater grab. So it's a slower, kind of more meditative, they hug the wool nicely. And then if you're really speedy and you're in a rush, you use metal needles, and they're very slick, so it's like Teflon. So the fibers just slide very, very quickly. And every type of fiber behaves differently against the needles, which is why when you meet a knitter and they pull out their needles, you'll notice that they have a lot of needles.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I never thought of that. And then I always think of wool, but as a natural fiber, but there are yarns that are synthetic?
There are. Well, and even within the natural world, I mean, you have wool, but then you have angora, alpaca, cashmere, kiviet, the downy undercoat of the Arctic muskox.
Huh.
Then you have silk, and you have natural bamboo and viscose bamboo and, you know, all sorts of degrees of synthetics. And then you get into blends, which makes it even more nuanced.
Now, with all those needles, I wondered about this with your travels. Because I don't try to travel with big knitting needles.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, you can get through security with big knitting needles.
Yep, I've never had a problem. The only time I've heard of some issues has to do with circular needles, which have a long nylon cable in between two ends. I've heard cases where very rarely, and usually it's like coming back from Cancun or going through London Heathrow, there's a problem. But I'll tell you what I do. I always have a backup. I carry a pen case, and I put two wooden kind of, they call them single-pointed straights. So they look like a pencil, but they have a tip on either end. And I put those in my pencil bag so that no matter what, no matter where I am, I do have some needles with me just in case.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. Margo in Middleton is with us. Hello, Margo.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning. Tell us your story.
Well, I'm one of the people who learned from my grandmothers and my mother, which is kind of unusual in my generation because a lot of people around my age learned from knitting groups or learned from YouTube or something like that. But I've been knitting and crocheting both since I was very young, and I'm just now moving to Wisconsin. I got a new job, and I've never lived here before, but one thing I learned when I did my last move was to contact and look up online on meetup.com and on other places for knitting and crocheting and other fiber groups, because it's a great way to meet people. We all have a commonality. Everybody seems to be very warm and friendly, and it's also a great way to meet people who are knowledgeable about whatever your new home is, because, you know, it's all kinds of people, and if you need help, like finding a mechanic or finding a plumber, you can usually ask in the group, and they'll give you all kinds of recommendations. And it's just a nice way, though, to meet people. And I've gone traveling. I travel a lot for work. And sometimes if I know I'm going to be in a place for a while and need a break, I'll look up a local group there and drop in. And they're usually, you know, very welcoming to someone, even if you're going to be there only once, and they want to know about where you've been and and what kind of things people are doing where you are, and it's just a really great community literally all over the world.
I love that, Margot, and welcome to Wisconsin, by the way. I'm glad you found Wisconsin Public Radio. Clara, it sounds like a wonderful community.
Oh, Margot makes such a good point. It's really true. And I suppose, I say this reluctantly, I suppose, you know, other special interest groups have similar experiences, but I've never experienced such a degree of immediate openness as I have in the knitting community, in terms of no matter where you go in the world, you need never, ever, ever be alone. Just like Margot said, I mean, you're in a new city and you have one day off, and you might be feeling a little blue, or maybe it's your birthday and you don't want to celebrate it alone. You can easily look up and find a multitude, hopefully, of yarn stores in that town. And within minutes, you could be hooked up with people who not only could help you with your knitting pattern, but help you, you know, where's the best place to celebrate my birthday? And they might even drum together an impromptu birthday party. I mean, it's not like you might not immediately find bosom buddies forever and ever, but you will never, ever need to be alone or lonely. And that's a remarkable gift.
That's beautiful. Thank you for the call, Margot. John in Delafield is with us. Hello, John.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm not a knitter, but I do recall my mother telling me about a football player, older listeners might remember, named Rosie Greer,
retirement.
With that for therapeutic reasons, and I'm curious if Clara could comment on the level of interest emerging or past among men in the art of knitting.
That's a really good question, John. You know, I think there's still, like, knitting itself is still subject to a lot of really outdated and inaccurate and often unkind social stereotypes. And unfortunately, I think that men knitting, they face a real challenge as well, because the stereotype extends to, oh, no, it's just grandma sitting in knitting chairs, you know, in rocking chairs. It's certainly not men. But, I mean, until the 1500s or beyond then, the initial guilds, they were all men. Women couldn't even join. Knitting was a male-dominated art. And we do have some extraordinarily talented men in our knitting world who are kind of leading the way. And I think the only way to move through this period of time is just to do like Rosie did, like just stand tall and say, you know what, I love to knit. What's your problem? You know, reflecting that we come in all different shapes and sizes and genders, and it's gender is not inextricably linked to the knitting gene. It's a pastime. That is, anybody can do it and is doing it.
Thanks, John, for the call. And yes, I do remember Rosie Greer. Nobody was going to make fun of him, though, too. You know, he was a big
football player.
Yeah. You know, we have just a couple of minutes before a news break. We only did one other show on knitting on this radio program, and it was kind of, you know, some years ago when it seemed as though knitting was beginning to take off, and that was the stereotype then. It was, you know, hey, it's not knitting isn't just for grandmas in their rocking chairs anymore. What was it, do you think, that triggered that all of a sudden, you know, young and old alike were knitting?
You know, I think it was kind of a collective cultural need to create. I mean, we're seeing it in every aspect of, like, artisanal brewers and chocolate makers. My brother is an artisanal bean-to-bar maker. Or, you know, people are suddenly opening up shops making bicycles from recycled drain pipes, or, you know, just a human need to express and to lend a personal imprint onto the world around us at a time when, you know, your own form of personal expression is choosing a font in which to write your emails.
That makes perfect sense. We are talking with Clara Parks. She is a writer, a knitter. She is author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. And we're talking about her travels and what she learned. And she is answering your questions and responding to your knitting experiences. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and some of you did post your knitting projects. We'll talk about them after the news.
I'm gonna knit, knit, knit all day. I'm gonna knit my blues away. Well,
we are talking about knitting this hour and the knitting world. We are taking a tour of the knitting world this hour with the author of Knitlandia, which is about the travels of a self-proclaimed yarn evangelist. And we are welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your knitting experiences. Are you a knitter or a wannabe knitter? What is the appeal? What are you making right now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Clara Parks is the author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. Her previous books include The Yarn Whisperer and The Knitter's Book of Yarn. And as mentioned before news, we have a few people who have posted photos of their projects on Facebook. Keldy on Facebook posted a photo of a piece of blue knitting shaped like Madeline Island, which is an island in Lake Superior in far northwest Wisconsin. I have been knitting for 40 years, ever since my grandmother taught me when I was 8. It did not end there. I spin my own yarn now. I knit everywhere I go. Now that I work on Madeline Island, I have begun to knit places as well. Here is Madeline Island in hand-spun and dyed alpaca. I do Lake Superior, too. Well, there you go. What, talk about a sense of place, Clara.
Wonderful. Good job.
Yeah, good job, Keldy. Marcia on Facebook shared a photo of two partially completed projects and says, a spring scarf and a hat. Only my third underway. I learned to knit on my back when I was temporarily unable to walk in order to have some productive way to fill my time. Hundreds of scarves and dishcloths later, I knit to calm my brain and to produce fun little gifts and donations. Well, there's, a reason to start. She needed something to occupy her time, and now look what all she's doing. We also had somebody asking on Facebook, I would love to knit, but I don't know where to start. What would you advise a wannabe knitter?
Oh, I would first of all, do it. It's great. Let's see. I would look up, find local yarn stores in your area. That's always the first point of attack. But also be aware that yarn stores are kind of like coffee shops or bars. I shouldn't make that metaphor, but what the heck. That each one has its own kind of distinct culture and environment and curation of yarns. And so if you go to one and you don't really feel that it's a fit, don't give up. Try to find another one. They're there. They want to help you learn. And just try digging your fingers into yarn and see if you feel a response. The other thing would be to look up sheep and wool festivals, knittersreview.com. If you click on the events button, we have a huge calendar of festivals and events and retreats and getaways where you can go. And really, you can learn and you can tap into this kind of ready-made community that's just waiting to welcome you.
It's funny that you mentioned that the yarn shops are maybe a little bit like bars, because this listener who wanted to know where to start said maybe there's a place that would have knitting and wine tasting at the same time.
There are. Oh, yeah. And then some knitting groups, they get together in bars. Just cut out the middleman and go straight to the source.
Why not? Jill emails, when my husband and I travel, my souvenir is always a local yarn. Mm. When I make something from that yarn, then I remember that vacation. What a good idea. I bet you do that too.
Brilliant. Yes, I just finished a cowl that is a total memory of I just got back from Texas. Oh, yes.
And are there distinctive different yarns in different regions of the U.S. or the world, for that matter?
Yes, that is part of what makes it so much fun, because wherever sheep go, depending on the altitude and the climate, the minerals in the water, and of course the sheep breed, you're going to have a very nuanced, different kind of a terroir, but within natural fibers. And then how they were processed and where they were processed and where they were spun also impacts the yarn that you get. So it really is possible to have a very distinct souvenir of a place in a skein of yarn.
And Jill goes on in her email saying, I tend to be anxious, but when knitting, my anxiety symptoms disappear. Have there been studies regarding knitting and lower anxiety or blood pressure?
Oh, there have. And I don't remember the exact statistics right now, but the New York Times just did a piece not too long ago about the healing effects of knitting, that it's a known fact Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Cynthia on Twitter, to the rescue here, Madison has the largest knitters guild in North America with 655 members. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's huge. That's just Madison. Our annual knit-in event, classes, and other sharing of knitting is March 18th through the 20th at the Alliant Energy Center. So sounds like a great event. Let's go to Linda in Edgerton. Hi, Linda.
Hey, hi there. With knitting-wise, I actually knit afghans for all my grandkids. I do it differently, though. Some of the reasons I knit, it doesn't always stay flat. But I have found if I use the birthstone colors, I knit first a good-sized triangle, then I crochet around that a circle, and then a square, then use all the three shades to go put a border around that, and my grandkids do the biggest kick out of that.
All right, and I missed that very last part, Linda, because your phone was a little bit scratchy, but what was the very last part?
My grandkids enjoy the afghans because nobody does it. They don't do different shapes like that where I do, and they proudly display them on the bed for all their friends to see them when they come over.
Oh, that's very nice. And you say you do them in the color of their
birthstone.
Oh.
Yep, I find three different shades, and I do the triangle first, then I crochet around that a circle, then around that a square. Then I'll combine all three colors to make a border around that.
Well, I wish you were my grandmother, Linda. Very nice. Thank you for doing that. I bet you her kids do, or grandkids do love them, but they're going to love them even more down the road, I bet.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, let's go to Amy in Mount Horeb. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Joy. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. What is your knitting story?
Well, first of all, I want to say hi to Clara. Hi, Clara. It's Amy.
Hi, Amy.
you know each other. But
I do know Clara, and the reason I'm calling is I'm a Wisconsin native and a Wisconsin Public Radio listener, and I also teach knitting, and I can honestly say that everything in my life that is good has come to me through knitting. And like Clara, I have devoted my life to it in a completely different way. But I go to all the events that Clara has written about, almost all of them. The Edinburgh Yarn Festival is the one I haven't been to yet, but I'm teaching at it in 2 weeks, so I'll be there. And just like Clara, I just wanted to say that knitting is, it can bring you so much more than just the scarf or the hat that you are knitting. It can bring you peace. It can bring you friends. It has brought me rescue animals. I met my landlady through at a knitting store, so I found a place to live because of knitting. It can actually just fulfill every gap in your life if you let it. It's the most amazing hobby that anybody could have.
How wonderful. Oh, wow. Thank you for calling, Amy. When you mentioned the rescue dog, that reminded me that someone said that they actually use dog hair to knit. Have you ever tried that?
You.
Did you say you?
Go ahead, Amy. No?
No, Clara. Clara, you're the expert. Take it.
Dog hair, depending on the breed, it can be really, really dense. I've never tried it, but I know if you were to try it, consider blending it with wool so that it's sort of like mixing flowers and leavening agents for bread, so that it's going to plump it up and kind of open it up and not make it so dense. But I've never tried that.
Well, I just, Amy, thank you for calling. And I'm sorry the phone line was a little bit scratchy, but what I took away from that call was that knitting doesn't just give you a mittens or a hat. It brings you peace and friendship and so much more.
Yeah, it does. It brings you, I would say, whatever you need, it has the capacity to expand and provide that for you. And if you don't need anything, it's not like it's going to swamp your life. It's just it will bring you whatever it is that you need.
Well, I realize that we haven't talked about every place you've been in Knitlandia, but maybe is there another journey that you took for the book that we haven't talked about that you think was sort of the pinnacle of the knitting world?
The pinnacle of the knitting world. It's kind of a journey backwards to Taos, New Mexico, years and years ago, to visit a woman named Louisa Gelinter, who was a legend in our world, who's no longer with us. And I think that was probably the greatest privilege of the stories that I got to tell was to make sure that people understood this is a woman that Julia Roberts was a fan of. was too shy to introduce herself to, allegedly, and stalked her in a grocery store. And that it was just the greatest privilege to be able to put that story down on paper where people can remember it and honor her tradition, but also kind of our collective history as we move forward.
Yeah. Let's go to Dee in Lake Geneva. Hi, Dee.
Good morning. I discovered my knitting when I was working at the museum, and there was a knitting machine there. And we're talking about a little circular machine, maybe 8 inches around, and nobody knew what it was or how it worked. And this is a sock knitting machine from 1908 that was developed, that wasn't developed, but it was made part of the culture of the United States when the soldiers in World War One needed socks desperately.
Oh, that's very neat, Dee. And I don't know what's wrong with our phones today. The last three calls have been so scratchy I can barely hear them. So I'm not sure if we have a little gremlin going on. But I'm going to jump in just because it's hard to hear you. But she has a vintage World War One knitting machine, Clara.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sock knitting machines. That's a whole amazing subculture that you can get into.
Right.
And World War One was a war fought in hand-knit or early hand-cranked machine-knit socks.
Yeah. Well, we in our final minute, maybe you, what is the takeaway for readers of Knitlandia?
I think the takeaway is that there is a really a rich, robust collective community and culture that's interesting and vibrant and growing and worth exploring, and that wherever you go, if you see the world through the lens of a knitter, these unusual, slightly off-kilter, deeper experiences are waiting for you.
Well, we will leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Clara Parks is a writer, a knitter, author of Knitlandia, A Knitter Sees the World. Her previous books include The Yarn Whisperer and The Knitter's Book of Yarn. Thanks to Marika Subal for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We'll be on the campaign trail talking about President Obama's impact on the 2016 presidential race coming up next. Tomorrow, it's Tell Joy Where to Go, and we'll talk about things to do in Wisconsin in March.